The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm good, Mitch. You know, Bruce Cassidy on that soundbite, he sounded a lot like Ken Hitchcock when you listen to the voice and you don't have a face to it. Sounded a lot like Hitch.
Ah, let's dig into the archives and get Ken Hitchcock and Bruce Cassidy and test Pierre in 22 minutes to see if he can tell the difference.
All right.
Why will Boston win tonight? I'm going to ask you the same question for the other guy.
Right. Well, I would hope you would. I think if Boston wins tonight, I'll answer it that way. If Boston wins tonight, they'll win because they got the lead. Their fan base was energized. There was no trepidation in the building after they got the lead. And Tuukka Rask was solid, and they didn't take more than two penalties in the game.
And if Toronto wins, it's because?
If Toronto wins, it's because Freddie Anderson plays the same way that he played in games 5 and 6. He delivers the same kind of performance in 7. The Boston Bruins only get one power play. They don't score on it. And I think the biggest thing is that Toronto gets the first goal. If those three things happen, I think Toronto wins.
All right, that's interesting because early on in the show, we've been talking about this a lot, and Rod believed above and beyond anything else for a Game 7, you'd rather play it on home ice, a Game 7 on home ice, even though home ice in these playoffs, it hasn't been anything.
No, it's been exactly 500 so far, 21-21.
You want to play a Game 7 at home, but you believe above and beyond the matchups, which we'll get to Pierre in just a second, it's the first goal.
Yeah, of course, Pierre, I understand every team's going to want to score first. That said, in a Game 7 situation, I just get the feeling like a player is going to relive all of their potential negative past experiences, and it could affect the way the rest of the game plays out. I just look at whoever gets the lead is going to end up winning tonight. And historically, in Game 7, that has been the case. Teams getting the lead in Game 7, 126-43.
Yeah, it's what, 75% or close to it?
Yeah.
I think if you score first in Game 7, here's the one situation. I personally haven't coached in Game 7s, and I don't even know how many I've broadcast. The biggest problem is if you fall behind in a Game 7, not always, but mostly, you chase the game. You get uncomfortable in your series game plan because you know that the clock is going to strike 12 at some point, and you're going to probably run out of time. So guys start to stray from the plan, and it becomes almost a malfunction at the junction type of situation. It really does. So the longer that it stays even, or the longer that you can play with the lead, the more comfortable you are in your plan. Once you fall behind, again, not always, but mostly, guys stray from the plan, and then it becomes harder to win.
But an older team, or a team that has several players who have been through it, like the Bruins have, you would not expect that kind of reaction from them.
Well, I think the one thing the Bruins have with Krejci's experience, with Bergeron's experience, with Rask's experience, even though it hasn't been fruitful more times than not, and obviously Chara, that's a lot of experience in a dressing room. And even Rick Nash has a tremendous amount of experience in playoff hockey. That's a lot of experience for a dressing room to have. It's easier to calm players down. This will be Patrice Bergeron's 10th Game 7. I'm going to interview him before the game and ask him, as a guy that's been through a ton of Game 7s, what do you tell the younger players? What's your recipe for success in Game 7s? Probably the most successful Game 7, the Bruins, and everybody talks about the one 5 years ago where they had that miraculous comeback and Bergeron scored the tying and winning goals, is 2011. They went into Vancouver. They didn't just win Game 7. They steamrolled the Canucks. You know, and you'd want to know, going on the road, how were you able to do that? And you would think that, especially Chara, Bergeron, Krejci, guys who were part of that 2011 team, would be able to impart a lot of that information to their teammates.
Well, of course, you're talking to an audience that remembers another notable Game 7 in 2011 that went into overtime in Boston.
Yep.
Was it Nathan Horton scoring the goal after Thomas Plekanec was waved out of the faceoff circle and Jeff Halpern lost the faceoff? Or he actually won the faceoff, but then he went down, blocked the shot, deflected past Carey Price, and you know what happened.
Well, you know, that year for the Bruins, and I know you remember that series, the big one, obviously Montreal, and the fact that Montreal had a 2-0 lead with the series going back to Montreal. But the other series that is important to remember is they played Tampa in the Eastern Conference Final.
Seven games.
Game 7 was 1-0. Yeah, Game 7 was 1-0. And Steve Downey had the most amazing wraparound opportunity in Game 7 when it was 0-0. And if it's not for Tim Thomas making that save, I don't know if the Bruins even get to the Stanley Cup Final. So it's to Rod's point, it shows you how important, you know, breaking the ice really matters in the Game 7. And eventually the Bruins won that game. Tim Thomas was a big part of it. They went on to win the Cup.
Guy Boucher's first year as an NHL coach with Pierre Maguire on site in Boston. Earlier today on Off the Cuff with Chris Nyland and Sean Campbell.
There's obviously a lot of nervous energy in both cities, I'm sure. But how they got here, I think Toronto feels really excited about being in a Game 7. I know the fans down here are, you know, they basically didn't even watch on the weekend because they thought the Bruins were going through on Saturday, you know, in Game 5. So I think there's a lot more, maybe, you know, not complete negative energy, but a little more anxiousness down here in Boston than there is in Toronto.
Andrew Raycroft, working at Nesson, of course, played with both teams. Is he put his thumb pretty much on the pulse of what's going on down there?
Everything was accurate by Andrew, except to say people weren't watching. The ratings have never been higher, so he'd be wrong on that account. But, yeah, people are watching, and yes, I would say there's a lot of trepidation in the city. He'd be right about that. I got here yesterday, as you know. I walked around a lot in the North End and through the financial district in Boston. I was obviously out in Belmont, too. So I was in three different places where I could kind of feel the energy, and it was nervous. Now, part of that, though, is the Celtics were playing a huge game, too, against Milwaukee here in Boston. So that's part of the angst that's driving the city, and obviously the Bruins, and the fact that a lot of people thought they'd win Game 5, and they weren't able to. And now you've got a prolonged series, and you got a heck of a series. But he'd be right on that. The one thing he was wrong on is people definitely were watching.
All right. I have the top 10 markets in America through the first 2 weeks of the Stanley Cup playoffs on NBC. And it's interesting. Very quickly, Denver is 10. Of course, Colorado was in it. Washington is tied for 8th with Fort Myers. How do you explain that one?
Tampa Bay.
Oh, of course. Okay. Columbus.
Tampa Bay and a lot of snowbirds that are still down there.
Columbus 7, Tampa 6, Providence, New England is right behind Boston at 4, Nashville for obvious reasons. Pittsburgh's the number one market. Number 2.
Buffalo.
And this speaks to the amazing hockey fans in Buffalo who deserve so much more than what they've received. Their team is long gone. They are the number 2 market in America in terms of watching the playoffs.
They are fantastic fans. They're not a little bit good. They're and they are fully invested civilian fans. There's not a lot of corporate support there. Those are people that put their hard-earned dollars into Sabres season tickets, Rochester Amherst season tickets, and obviously, they watch on television, and they're gigantic fans. I love going to Buffalo. I really, really, truly enjoy going to do games in Buffalo. And in the last couple of years, we haven't had the opportunity as a network to really go there because the team hasn't been relevant. I do think with the new management there, with Jason Bottrell, with Randy Sexton, with Phil Housley, I do think that they're starting to get more relevant. And I think that they'll have a big summer and potentially get off to a rousing start. I see a lot of similarities with Buffalo and the New Jersey Devils. It took Ray Shero 3 years to get his blueprint in place in New Jersey, and I see a lot of the same kind of stuff going on in Buffalo. And remember, it was Jason Bottrell and Randy Sexton who used to work for Ray Shero in Pittsburgh.
So we went over the critical importance we both place on the early start. Which team would be best prepared if they happen to trail? Which team would be best served if they do have to chase the game and can get back in it?
The Bruins, because they've done it so much this season, and they've done it in glowing fashion. They've done it in this series as well. If you think back to it, Game 1, you know, they've done some really good things, the Bruins, in terms of they up the ante, and their bench becomes really intense when they fall behind. I think tonight they know, though, it's really important that they get the icebreaker early because the fans can, and I think the fans did this in Toronto, by the way, the other night, because when Toronto fell behind 1-0, the fans didn't quit on them, and they got the goal within a minute of the first Bruins goal, and the place erupted, and then it became really difficult for Boston. And the fans helped the Blue Jays, obviously the Maple Leafs. And I think here, the fans can help the Bruins a lot, and that's one of the things I think they're probably talking about as a group.
A reminder again, if you're not in front of your television set, you're driving around, you'll be able to hear the game. Maybe you're at work on a computer. You'll be able to hear the game right here on TSN 690 at 7 o'clock. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, and in for Mitch Gallo is Sean Coleman.
Pierre, news out of Quebec City earlier today that Patrick was expected to return to the Remparts as a coach and a GM. Could you see this as being the start of the road back to the NHL for Patrick?
Why not? Absolutely. You know, I remember Alain Vigneault did the same thing, and I'm sure if they haven't talked, they will talk. Alain did it when he got fired in Ottawa as an assistant. He went to Quebec. It's actually Beauport at the time. And then he went back to PEI when he got fired in Montreal, and he did a real good job. He had Maxime Lapierre there. That's when Sidney Crosby was playing in the Quebec Major Junior League, and PEI, Charlottetown, would play tons of games against Rimouski. And, you know, those were hard games, but Vigneault, I think, really refined his coaching skills in a lot of those matchup games, and a lot of people saw that because Crosby was such a vaunted player at the time. So the answer is yes. And one of the things that's happening in the Quebec Major Junior League, and this goes to what I've been telling you guys, Sean, for a long time, is the 18 draft's good. It is. It's a good draft. The 19 draft and the 20 draft are phenomenal. And there'll be some very good Quebec-born players in both of those drafts. So that brings scouts and that brings decision makers with NHL teams in to watch the Quebec Major Junior League. And if you're coaching in the league, you get a chance to really show off your skills. So if Patty does that, and I believe that to be true based on some of the things I've heard from people, plus he's one of the owners of the team, if not the owner of the team, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a ton of sense.
Or maybe he'll just hang in there until they get an NHL franchise.
Well, I hope they do. You know, Mitch, how long have you and I talked about that? I really, really hope they do. It pains me. You know, I know it's a few years ago now, but when my son was playing in the Quebec Pee Wee Tournament, they had a lot of success there, and I had the NBC let me travel back and forth from Quebec to go do my games and then go back up to Quebec City. It was awesome. It brought back so many great memories, being in the Colisée and seeing some of the old restaurants I used to go to, staying in the lobbies of some of the hotels we used to stay at, whether it was the Chateau Frontenac or other hotels. And, you know, I coached so many games up there, so many awesome memories. And that town deserves NHL hockey. It really does. And I know they can do it. I know they can.
You mentioned Ray Shiro and the Devils a few minutes ago. John Hines, before we finish up where we started with you in Boston, Pierre McGuire on site, 7:30 start tonight. John Hines, on his parting message to his players, start over. There's no momentum from year to year. Understand what it will take to be competitive again.
He's 100% correct. You know that you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. My terminology is don't bury your head in the sand and say that, oh, we had a great year and it'll carry over to the next year. That's not how it works. You can't forget how hard you had to work to get to the level that the Devils are at right now. You have to continually forge forward. I believe that they will. But one of the biggest things they'll have to do there, and Ray Shiro's aware of this, they're going to there'll be changes there at the player level. They're going to have to amalgamate some different players into their organization. So you have to be able to do that without losing your identity as a group. And that's going to be on John and Alain Nasruddin and Jeff Ward, the three coaches there, along with Ryan Clough. It's going to be up to those guys to really be able to do that. And if they can do that, that team is going to surge. They were good this year. They will be much better next year if they're able to do that as a staff. And I know that the coaching staff is aware of that, so that would speak to what John's message was to the team at the end of the season.
Jeff Ward is one of Claude Julien's old assistants with the Bruins. Well, where are they? Just curious, because you know there's a lot of speculation that he'll finally be able to bring in one of his own assistant coaches. So we know where Jeff Ward is. Doug Jarvis, I think, is in Vancouver. I think
he is in Yes, he is. You're absolutely right.
Doug Huda was another one, right?
Yeah, he's in Detroit.
Okay,
and they kept the staff. One thing I would say, and no, I have no inside knowledge on this, but I would just tell you this because I had a chance to watch his work for good portions of this season. whatever list the Canadians are putting together, whether it's for head coaches in the American Hockey League or assistant coaches at the NHL level, one guy whose name should be on the list, and maybe it already is, should be Ian LaPerriere.
Assistant in Philly.
Yeah. Doing awesome work in Philadelphia. Just outstanding work. And I see how, you know, a young player like Sean Couturier has evolved as an offensive and defensive force. I watched the influence he had on Nolan Patrick and how he grew as a player in the second half of the year. I watched Scott Laughton and talked to him a lot, a former first-round pick of the Flyers, who was a tremendous junior player and played and represented Canada at the World Junior, the development he had this year. And I watched how their penalty killing, in particular, got better during their season series, or their playoff series, with Pittsburgh, and how much better it got. He's the guy that engineered that. This year, more than ever, I could see the growth of him as a coach. And he should be on any list for any team that's looking for guys. I don't know if he'd leave Philly, but I'm just telling you, he should be on any list.
Okay, now we'll see what the Canadians do, but should point out, J.J. Daigneault is in the final year of his contract as an assistant coach with the Canadians.
He's entering, or he just completed?
This is it. He's finished.
He's done. J.J. Daigneault's contract is over.
It runs through the end of June.
Right.
So, as the standard NHL coach contract
and
runs
as
through
Mike
the end
Farber
of June.
Told us, Kirk Muller still has another year.
So, Pierre, what I'm curious about is, would it be standard if the team decides that they want to make a change, would you not want to give a coach the out as opposed to kind of keeping him on staff until the final day of his contract legally?
Yeah, you would. And you would tell him, you would hope you'd be told as a coach, right after your end-of-the-year debrief, either we're keeping you or we're not keeping you, especially now because there are openings. There's an opening, obviously, in New York. The only holdover will be Lindy Ruff, and I don't even know if he'll be coaching. He might be pro-scouting or working in management. You know, there's openings in Dallas. Everybody knows that. There are potential, I think, other openings in the league that might happen. There's going to be a managerial change in Minnesota. Who knows what that means to the coaching staff? So there's the potential for a lot of movement. You would hope that a well-run, proper organization, if they're not going to bring a guy back, they would tell that person immediately at the end of their debrief.
And one other, I know you got to run because you got to do some work
here. No, I do not. I do not have to run.
All right, we have some news out of the Canadiens camp, actually,
yeah,
Sean.
Habs announcing today Andrew Shaw underwent knee surgery. He's expected to miss at least 6 months.
So that's Shaw and Byron who might miss the beginning of next season. Two players.
Uh-huh.
Two wingers. Okay. The key matchups tonight, Pierre, to look for.
Well, Matthews, at some point you would think, would start to percolate, but I think it becomes harder for him to do that on the road because of Chara and McAvoy. Kadri has to play a role in a matchup situation, I think, against Bergeron because Toronto's had such a difficult time containing the cycle. But if you have a stabilizing center iceman defensively, and Kadri's one of those guys, that makes a difference. And so I would say that he against Bergeron has to be a matchup that Toronto wins. If they don't, then they're going to have a problem. Hainsey and Riley are going to have to play the same way they played in Game 5, especially Hainsey, who played almost 10 minutes more than he had in Game 4. He played 26 in Game 5 and 17 in Game 4 minutes on ice. He and Morgan Riley are going to have gigantic games. I would say both guys will have to be over 23 minutes and be plus players if they're going to be successful.
Any word on whether Komarov goes back in or not?
Well, I was at the morning skate. If he's not in, then that's a heck of a camouflage. He was skating a regular group. It looked like he was going to take Andreas Janssen's position as a winger, and it was going to be Plekanec and Nylander as his, other forward groupings with Komarov. So we'll see. If he's not in, I'll be shocked. And I told you yesterday, that's the one player, along with Roman Polak on defense, that Babcock thinks he really needs to have if he's going to win on the road. Listen, and he's probably right on this. So I'd lean more towards his thinking than other people's. To win on the road, it's about character. In a Game 7, it's about character, it's about discipline, and it's about maturity. Those three things matter a ton. And what I know about both those players, they've got character and they've got maturity, and they're not going to be undisciplined. Not in a game like this. They may be in an 82-game schedule, but they won't be in a game like this.
We're going out today with the words from yesterday from Hall of Famer Ray Bourque with Knuckles Nylund and Sean Campbell. Enjoy, Pierre. Can't wait to talk to you about it tomorrow at 5:05. Thank you very much.
I'll be in Washington getting ready for Game 1, Washington-Pittsburgh, tomorrow.
Well, I think as a player, when I played for all those years, I know if there was a Game 7 and where I wanted it played, and it wasn't on the road. I wanted to be at home in my bed in front of our fans, and I think my record in Game 7s is like 7-1, something like that. So I've got good thoughts about Game 7s and played, especially when they're played at home.